We left off last week. We were discussing about the Ritzuos. We mentioned that one of the halachos of the Ritzuos is Kesher Shel Tefillin. There's a halacha Moshe Messina that we require Kesher Shel Tefillin. It wasn't clear exactly what the parameters of the halacha Moshe Messina were. Does it really have to look like a dalet? Not look like a dalet. What is a dalet? The different halachos that we spoke about at the end of the shiur last week. There is another kesher that we make, of course, and that's the kesher of the Shel Yad. So is that also included in this statement that tefillin shall, that kesher shall tefillin halacha Moshe Messinai, that which it looks like a little schmitzik on the side of our bias, is that also called kesher shall tefillin halacha Moshe Messinai? So Rashi says yes. Rashi claims that just as there's a halacha that the kesher on the Shel Rosh has to look like a dalid, so the kesher on the Shel Yad has to look like a yud. So Rashi says, and why is that? Why is there a halacha Moshe Messinai, a dalid and a yud? So he says, if you combine it with the shin that's on the bias, so it makes up the Shem Hashem of Shakai. So Rashi learns that's the halacha Moshe Messina, that you have to have the Shem Hashem of Shakai on the tefillin. So one halacha Moshe Messina is the shin on the bias, and the other is the dalet on the back, and the other is the yod on the arm. And that's all included. That's one big halacha Moshe Messina of a Shem Hashem on the tefillin. That's what Rashi says, Pshat in the Gemara. When the Gemara says that Varosh called Ame Haaretz, Ki Shem Hashem Nikra Alecha V'yarami Mecha, so the Gemara says the non-Jews will see that the Shem Hashem is on you. So the Gemara says, Elu Tefillin Sheh Barosh. This refers to the Tefillin Sheh Barosh. So why the Tefillin Sheh Barosh in contrast to the Tefillin Sheh Biyad? So Rashi says, because the Tefillin Sheh Barosh have two-thirds of the Shem Hashem on it. Because the Tefillin Sheh Barosh has the Shin and has the Dalet, whereas the Tefillin Sheh Yad only has the Yud. So this whole idea of Rashi that there's Mamasha Halacha Moshe Messinai, it's got to be a Shin, it's got to be a Dalet, it's got to be a Yud, it's got to spell out the Shem Hashem. So many Rishonim say that it's not true. Many Rishonim say that this idea that it spells out the Shem Hashem, this is not a real deal. This is not a real halacha. Some Rishonim have a very strange question according to Rashi. The Mordechai puts such a question. If Rashi is right that the Ritzuos and Mamish the Shem Hashem on them, how do you ever have a right to undo the Ritzuos? It should be a shot of Mochikas Hashem. It's a strange question. It should be like erasing the Shem Hashem. Just as you're not allowed to take an eraser and erase Mamish, if you would have the Shem, the Shem of Shakai on a piece of paper would be an Nisa Deraisa to erase it. So if you really hold that the Ritzuos are considered to be part of the Shem Hashem, so it should be us in a third to undo the Ritzuos. It's a strange question.
No, why? The Shin is on the road.
Yeah, but according to Rashi,
the Dalet is here, doesn't come apart, and the Yud is permanent here. You're talking about this Shin that you're putting here?
No. That person wants to fix the Ritzuos. The guy wants to fix his Ritzuos. He's going to take apart the Dalet. So that should be an Issa Deraisa Mechikas Hashem. That's the question. Rishonim is this Kasha, not my Kasha. The Rishonim are bothered with this Kasha, according to Rashi. Whatever the answer to this Kasha is, Rashi wasn't so bothered with the Kasha. The bottom line is that, according to Rashi, there is a halacha, it's part of the halacha Moshe Messinai, that the Kasha on the Shel Yad should actually look like a Yud. So others question whether that's really true. The Gemara never says that explicitly. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes as a Chumrah. Mishnah Berurah says, let's say a person is wearing his tefillin, and he realizes that the Shel Yad, the Kasha opened up a little bit, and it doesn't exactly look like a Yud. It lost a little bit of its Tirus HaYud. So the Mishnah Berurah says, should retie it, make sure that it looks like a Yud, because Rashi holds that is also included in the Halacha L'Moshe Messinai. There is a Halacha that appears in Shulchan Aruch that doesn't have a Suos in the Gemara. Some of their answers, there are answers. Okay, I don't know any answers, but there is an answer. The Kasha doesn't bother me that much, though. I'm not going to look around for questions. There is a din in Shulchan Aruch that does not have a source in the Gemara, and that is as follows. The Shulchan Aruch writes that a person has to be careful that his kesher, Shel Yad, should always be touching the bias at all times. Where does that come from? Where does such a halacha come from? So it has its source in the Zohar. So the Zohar says you have to be very, very careful that the kesher Shel Yad shouldn't move, shouldn't budge from the bias. So again, the Gemara doesn't say that, but the Shulchan Aruch does quote this statement from the Zohar. So that's why many people have problems with this. Very often when you tie it fill in, so the kesher starts to move a little bit. So that's what we always recommend, that you go to a sofer. It'll give you a gid, it'll give you something, a little tie or something that'll keep the two together. So one should try to be to follow this halacha that appears in the Shulchan Aruch again, even though it doesn't appear in the Gemara itself. So basically at this point we've somewhat completed the first half of the Shiurim and Hilchos Tefillin in the sense of what makes up a pair of Tefillin. We spoke about the Parshios and about the Batim and the Ritzuos. Now I want to move into the second half of Hilchos Tefillin in terms of the Hanochas Tefillin, the mitzvah of wearing Tefillin, where one wears it, how one wears it, when one wears it, who is obligated in Tefillin, things of this nature. So the halacha is very exact in terms of where exactly the hanachas tefillin is, where the makom hanachas tefillin is. So the Gemara tells us that when the Torah says ukshatam also al yadecha, so yadecha doesn't mean you have a choice whichever hand you want to put it on. This is a very specific halacha, which hand you have to put it on. It has to be the yad keha. It has to be the weaker of the two hands. The Gemara has a whole series of different drushas to come to this conclusion. The two famous drushas run as follows, that one is yad keha, because in one place the Torah writes v'ayelchos al yadcha. It spells yadcha in a strange way. It spells yadcha yudal chof. Hey, so Yad Keya teaches me the weaker of the two hands. And then the Gemara has another drush. The other famous drush is Ukshartam Ukhsaftam. That just as a person writes with your right hand, Ksiv as Biyamin, so too the Kshir as Biyamin, so too you tie with your right hand. It means the hand that you're doing to tie the tefillin, so that's considered to be, that has to be with your stronger hand. So it's obvious if you're tying with your stronger hand, then the tefillin are on your weaker hand, because how in the world are you going to tie with the same? It's going to be very difficult to tie with the same hand that the tefillin are on. So Maksiva Biyamin, Akshir Biyamin, Mechlal the Hanocha B'smol. So the inference of that statement is that the hanochas atvilin is on the weaker of the two hands. So these are the two famous drushas that appear in Maseches Menachos. So the Gemara raises the question, what would the halacha be if a person is a lefty? Would the halacha change for such a person? So the Gemara says yes. The Gemara says that it's not the halacha that you put tefillin on your left hand, but the halacha is you put tefillin on your weaker hand. So if you personally are a lefty, so then you put tefillin on your right hand. That's what the Gemara says explicitly. So notwithstanding what it says in the Gemara, there are other sources in Chazal that perhaps disagree with this. There is a Zohar seems to disagree with this. The Zohar says that you put tefillin on your left hand no matter what, whether you're righty or lefty, it doesn't matter. That's the halacha. You have to put tefillin on your left hand. How do we paskin in halacha? So we have a klal in halacha. Whenever there's a machlokes, the Gemara and the Zohar, we always follow what it says in the Gemara. So that's why in Shulchan Aruch, the Zohar's opinion isn't quoted, the other opinion isn't quoted, and the Rishonim, the standard Rishonim, so don't quote this idea, and the Rif, and the Ram, and the Rosh, or the regular normal Sifri halacha. So just quote straight what it says in the Gemara Maseches Menachos, that a lefty puts tefillin on his right hand and shoy. Nevertheless, there were some later achronim, Chassidus Shapolskim, who were more concerned about this statement of the Zohar, and they wanted to be choshish for the Zohar also. So there is a minig that some had. There was some Polskim who had a minig that lefties, a regular lefty, not an epidech, not a wild person, a regular normal lefty, so he puts on tefillin on his right hand for the whole davening, yeah, and then after davening, he takes the tefillin off for a second, like Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, he takes the tefillin off and swishes it onto the other hand. I think Kesh is in the wrong place, and none of that's really ma'akev. So he takes the tefillin for 1 second and he puts it on and he ties it, so puts it on and off, chick-chack, and that's it. What? Yeah, upside down, whatever it is, yeah. Yeah, whatever it is, right. So, I'm minig in most places. Most people don't have that. Anyone ever see that? Anyone ever heard of anyone who does that? Any lefties here? You do that?
I don't. My father is German, and they asked, he is lefty, but they asked him lots of questions about different things.
Oh, so that's a different story, right? Because that could be, we're not 100% sure Pete Dinney's a lefty. We'll get that in a second. But those, a lot of people like that exist. But I'm talking about someone who's mamish, purely, he does everything. He throws lefty, bats lefty, he's not a switch hitter, nothing. Mamish does everything. He hammers lefty, brushes teeth, everything that works. So in Shulchan Aruch, in the regular standard Svarim say that he puts his tefillin on his right hand and finish and nothing. But there were some who said that after davening, he should put on afterwards. Yeah, it's not really our minute. What the more complicated challenge becomes is to determine whether a person is really a righty or a lefty. So it doesn't sound like it should be so difficult. So the problem is very, very difficult, that there are a lot of people who are a little bit of mixes, that they do some things righty and some things lefty.
So according to what you said, should be shy at all? Like, see the cue. So what happens is you should go by what you write.
Well, hold on.
You just said.
I didn't say what the shiloh was. You told me it's not a shiloh. Hold on. Let me talk about the shiloh first. Then you can disagree. So come to Rishonim already and discuss this very serious shiloh about if a person does some things in one way and other things in another way. He writes in one way and he throws a ball, another way and he bats, another way and he eats, another way. Everything's a whole balagan. What he does, is he considered to be a righty or is he considered to be a lefty? So there are basically two approaches in the Rishonim, two primary approaches in the Rishonim, how to deal with this problem. So one primary approach in the Rishonim is Elchanan's approach, that the only thing that matters is writing. That's it. Whatever you write with, that's what carries the day. And that seems to be borne out by the drush of Ukshartam Uksaftam. It means Maksiva Biyamin, Afkshir Biyamin, Mechlal Danocha B'smol. If you write with your right hand, you put tefillin on your left hand. You write with your left hand, you put tefillin on your right hand. What else you do, everything else in the world is Lomal of Lomal. You're totally irrelevant. That's one group of Rishonim. And other Rishonim say that would all be nice if that's how we paskin, that the real Darasha, the real Mokor for the din of putting tefillin on the left hand is from Makshir B'Yamin, Afksir B'Yamin. Many say that if you look at the Gemara, it sounds like the Maskana of the Gemara is from Yad Kea. It's from the Pasuk of Yad Kea, not from that drush of Ukshartim Uksaftam. And there may be a difference in the halacha between those two drushes. If you go the root of the drush of Ukshartim Uksaftam, then the first group of Rishonim are right, then everything follows Ksiva, and that's it. But if you go the Yad Kea story, so what does Yad Kea mean? Yad Kea means the weaker of the two hands. So how do you determine whether a hand is weaker or not? So you have to assess all the different things that a person does. So just because he writes with one hand, but if he does everything else with the other hand, so then if you ask the guy, which is your stronger hand? So his strong hand is his left hand, his strong hand is his right hand. So l'chora, you should follow, like in all other areas of halacha, rov. So you follow rov melachto, whatever most things a person does. You have to ask him a few questions, find out what are the basic strengths that he has, and if it appears that most of his strengths are coming from one hand, even though for quirk he happens to be riding with the other hand, so l'chora, you should follow rov, you should follow what's called rov melachto. So both of these opinions appear in the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Tefillin. Shulchan Aruch isn't machria. The Shulchan Aruch himself doesn't decide the difference between these two approaches. But the Ramah does. The Ramah says that our minig is, he claims that the Ashkenazi minig is to follow ksiva. That the only thing that really matters is which hand you write in. Bein the right hand, bein the left hand, that's the only thing that carries the day. This is the Psach of the Ramah. However, the issue doesn't end here, because the Gra on that Ramah says he thinks the other day in the Shulchan Aruch is the more correct. He thinks that we should follow like the other opinion, that you should really follow Rov Malachto. So now we have a big problem. You have a lot of kids like this. Well, I don't mean mixed up in a bad way, but mixed up in terms of what they're doing. This used to be even more prevalent years ago. You would have a lot of these shadows as follows. Most of the Rishonim say that let's say a person is born a certain way, now he's trained to do something another way. So we usually assume that if he's trained to do something, that will change. The halacha, you don't follow what his natural tendency is. So let's say when he was in preschool, so he used to color with his left hand. And now he comes to first grade and they teach him, nope, you're not allowed to write with your left hand. You have to write with your right hand. They tie his left hand on his back and they make him write with his right hand. So he becomes a right-handed writer. But the problem is that he's doing everything else with the left hand, because they don't tie his hand behind his back when he brushes his teeth and when he throws the ball and whatever. So you have a mother situation. You have a kid who's writing one way and he's doing everything else another way. So this used to happen much more common years ago, before they realized this is probably not the greatest thing for the development of the child's anything. So this is usually not the practice with Manazah. I remember when I was a kid, it wasn't that long ago, in elementary school, so there was, I think, one lefty desk in the entire school. Like, it was understood that everyone's going to be a righty, whoever's not a righty. So either you had to suffer, or you had to learn how to be a righty. So again, that was 30 years ago, 40, 35 years ago, it wasn't so long ago. So Kal Vachomer, 150 years ago, they would teach everybody to become a righty. But even Bizman Azeh, they don't do this obviously anymore. They don't retrain people to write. Whatever they write, they write. But still, you have a lot of kids, a lot of Bar Mitzvah boys who have these kinds of issues, that they're half one way, half another way, and you have to be Mechuyah the Shaila. So this becomes a very, very complicated Shaila. So those who follow straight Ramah, so they would say, you just follow writing, and that's it. Whatever you write with, you put your foot on the other end of discussion. Those who want to be chayshish, those who want to follow the gra, so then they're going to do the other way. They're going to follow Rov Malachta, which may not necessarily be the same. So Rabbi Willig had an interesting idea that he thought, Bisman Hazeh, it's quite possible that everybody ends up in the Ramos camp. Even the gra would end up in the Ramos camp for the following reason. He said that he thinks that perhaps the concept of Rov Malachta of the gra may change according to the time and place based on the following. Means it could be what Rov Malachto meant in the days that it grew up 200 years ago is not Rov Malachto in the year 2008. Why is that? So he said basically there's a difference in terms of between strength and dexterity. I'm not a physical therapist, so anyone can correct me if I use the wrong terminology. But I think it's basically which means strength versus dexterity. So sometimes you have a situation where a person's stronger hand is such and such, but a person's those types of activities, they don't really need strength, they need dexterity, such as, let's say, for argument, say holding a fork, brushing teeth, or writing, which is an act that doesn't really require brute strength. So those types of activities will be with a different hand. So in the olden days, when people worked out in the fields, and people worked manual labor, so a person, the only dexterous type, whatever that word means, used to do was to write. So everything else was strength, was brute strength. So then you had, then the gra tied in. The guy does everything with his right hand. That's mamish, that's a strong hand. That's what he does rov malachta with. He hammers and nails with that, and he carries everything with that. He does everything with his right hand. And all he does is write with his left hand. So the writing is bottle barov. The writing is insignificant, and therefore you follow the brute strength. Whereas Bisman Hazeh, nobody works in brute strength. I mean, most yeshiva, most guys bar mitzvah bachar, he's 13 years old, b'zman hazeh, even when he's older. So that's how people work b'zman hazeh. Most people write, either they write, or they work by the computer, and most people's work b'zman hazeh is more dexterity rather than brute strength. So therefore it could be that b'zman hazeh, the strength and dexterity, in a sense, may become one and the same. That rov malacht of b'zman hazeh may end up much more likely to be the hand that the person actually writes with, rather than the way it used to be in the olden days. So according to this cheshbon, it comes out that you have to ask the person a couple of questions. You have to ask them, which hand do you write with, and which hand do you hold the toothbrush with, and which hand do you hold the fork with? Those are the questions that we should be asking b'zman hazeh. 200 years ago, you had to ask, which hand would you hammer in a nail? Which hand would you carry something? Would you saw a piece of wood? Which hand would you do something which really requires strength? Whereas b'zman hazeh, you don't have to ask that question. B'zman hazeh, you have to ask the dexterity questions, which 99% of the time will be the same as the writing, because writing is a function of dexterity. So according to this chiddush of his, it comes out that in the end of the day, there's really no machlokes there among the grub b'zman hazeh, and usually you end up following writing. That's the bottom line. At the end of the day, you end up basically following writing. Again, not everyone agrees to this by far. Many say that it's still a machlokes, the Ramah says is, and the Gros says it. So that's why you still have b'zman hazeh, a lot of different psachim floating around. You have a lot of different bar mitzvah boys who get different psachim in this area. So I imagine this was what you were referring to, that you have these kinds of shilas where it's unclear, it's hard to be machri exactly which hand to write. That's why there are some who recommend, when you have these kinds of kids where you just can't come up with a straight answer, whether they're righty or lefty. So there are some folks who recommend that you try to be machri as best as you can to pick the correct hand, and then after davening, you tell the kid that you should always, for the rest of his life, you should always take the tefillin off and put him back on the other hand for a second, just to be on Surah Chaladeh. So there are some who have such a practice. So that enough for a fact.
With the bracha, which I
would... No, second time without a bracha. No. It means you're paskin one way, and the chumra b'yam,
you put it on. The kid keeps the shal rosh on.
That's a different show. We have to talk about that. About can you have one on without the other? You're not really supposed to have the show Rosh on without the show Yad. But then I'm okay better anyway. So again, the different approaches are either to take the straight Ramah, that's just to say that it all depends on Ksiv and finish, or to go the Grozvart that it goes with the Rov Malachto, or to take this kind of a Pshara that Bizman is at Rov Malachto and Ksiv may end up being synonymous. No, but we don't really follow the Zohar. We don't pass like the Zohar, so it doesn't really. I don't think it really enters into the equation.
So what if you have a situation where, let's say, a regular kid puts his hand on his left, and for some reason he can't, like he's in the past or something. So which hands will say that?
That switch. I mean, we'll have to talk about that a little bit later on. We talk about putting tefillin in general on casts, or when the arms breaks, or. A person has a stroke, different things that change over the course of life that may change if they put tefillin on a different hand. I'm not sure what that goof is going to change this particular shiloh. So now that we have it down pat, we know exactly which hand to put the tefillin on, maybe. So the question is, where on the hand are we supposed to put the tefillin? What's considered to be the makom anachas tefillin? So the Gemara says quite clearly that the halacha Moshe Mesinai is that tefillin are not put on this part of the hand, they're put on the upper part of the hand. The Gemara learns it out from a whole series of different psukim to support this idea. Also, Sabnus Devarayel Alevavchem, it's supposed to be Kinegan Alev, different Makaris, but the bottom line is that tefillin are clearly not put in the bottom part of the arm, they're clearly put in the top part of the arm. Which part of the top part of the arm are they put on? So the Gemara says they have to be put on what's called the kibores. So what does the kibores mean? So the kibores means the muscle. So that's clear that it has to be on the muscle part of the arm. If the tefillin or the shalyada is not placed on the muscle, so then mamash one is not yet in the mitzvah. So if one puts it too low, you put the tefillin mamash on your elbow, or so it's a half an inch above the elbow, so then half the bias is below where the muscle begins, so that would not be acceptable. Once you're on the muscle, the Gemara doesn't seem to say that there are any other limitations, so anywhere on the muscle would be good. So there were a group of Rishonim who had the following Yechidish, that they said, there's a question where exactly they got it from, but there's a phrase that exists in some of the early Rishonim called Plag Zeroa. That means that it has to be on the lower half of the Zeroa. The Zeroa means this part from the elbow to the shoulder. So it has to be on the muscle, and it has to be on the bottom half of the Zeroa. It's got to be on the bottom half of the arm. The bottom half of the top half of the on, plug Zeroa. That's what some Rishonim say. So many Rishonim never heard of such a thing. There's no such halacha. As long as it's on the Zeroa and as long as it's on the muscle, so sure, no, it's not a problem. So how do we pass it? Are we cheshish for this? So the Mechaber and the Ramah both quote this. Both quote this opinion, this chumradic aversion, that there's a halacha plug Zeroa that has to be in the bottom half of the Zeroa. And the Gra says Lahayud Vamiel. The whole thing is a Tal Sofer. The whole thing is Lahayud Vamiel. There is no such halacha. So how do we follow the halacha? So the poskim write that one, if one is able to, Lamalo, Yosta Batikara, so be able to fulfill this position in the Rishonim that should be on the plag Zro, on the bottom here for the Zroa, so Ma Tov. If you're not able to, you're not able to. A person, sometimes you have a mitzvah boy, his hand is too small, says tefillin too big, says it doesn't fit. So then Nishkefelach, it's not the end of the world. The Ikebikra didn't be paskin like the Gra, the Yerchashukha writes, that's the minute. The Iker idea is like the Gra, that we're not really so concerned with this plague Zerah, but L'chadchil, if one is able to, one should try to. So this always throws into a question, just practically, I guess we have to do a little exhibit as we, you want to take pictures? I don't know if you want to, if you want. Not going to say anything, so Tommy wants to bring his camera. I said, okay. So I should have had taken the camera, I should have kept my tefillin on for the Shia. So this becomes always a question, where how exactly you make this cheshbon? So we know where this Zerah begins, it starts on the elbow and ends at the shoulder, the armpit, whichever part, and we know where the muscle is. So, Papa, you know, it starts from over here and goes to about over here, so you got a pretty big area. The problem is that according to some Rishonim, if you put your tefillin all the way up here, so it's not in the plug's row, it's not in the bottom part of the muscle. So you should always try to keep your tefillin as lower down towards the muscle, to closer to the very, very beginning of the muscle, in order to avoid any part of the tefillin going too high up. The problem is, if you have the tefillin going too low, too close to the elbow, you may goof, and you may put them a little bit too close to the elbow, and then you're not yetzik with anybody, because it's not in the muscle anymore. So now becomes a multi-million dollar question, where does the muscle start? So what's the big lumdisha question? It's a very simple question. Where does the muscle start? The muscle starts presumably where it starts to go up a little bit. That's considered to be the beginning of the muscle. But if you notice, when you put your arm in a tefillin position, the muscle jumps about an inch or so. So what's considered to be the beginning of the muscle? Over here? You should draw a little line over here. Or over here? It's a little bit of space. That little bit of space in a bar mitzvah boy may make all the difference in the world. Even not a bar mitzvah boy may make all the difference in the world. So which one is it? So it's usually assumed, the lekula nashat, it's usually assumed that as long as the flesh is starting to go up, as long as the bust is starting to go up a little bit, even in a relaxed, non-tefillin position, so that's also considered to be the muscle. So therefore, according to, that's the quote from Rav Yashiv, such a thing, that's others have, even though it doesn't say this beferish, I remember I spoke to Rav Willing about this many years ago, I asked him, what's the marker for that idea? How do you know, where does it say how to be mashal where the muscle is? He said he has no idea, he doesn't know why anyone thinks that it's one way or the other, he has no clue, no one has any marker for this. But that seems to be the consensus, just about consensus view today, that the muscle begins already here. So if it's true that the muscle begins here, so then one should try to put his tefillin as close to that point as technically possible without having it go too low, because that way you're much more sure that you're going to get it on plag zroa. So sometimes it's not practical. Sometimes our tefillin, as we mentioned before, are bigger than the tefillin that used to be in the days of the Gemara. In the olden days, the tefillin were significantly smaller. Then in Europe, they got a lot bigger. In America, they got a little bit smaller again. But they're not as small as they were in the days of Chazal. So with our tefillin, it's not so easy to always put it in the right place. That's why there was a suggestion that was made by some batimachas. They wanted to make much smaller tefillin. But the problem is when you make very small tefillin, then you have to make the parshias small also. It's very hard to make small parshias. So somebody came up with this great idea called the small tall tefillin. That means the halacha is that the tefillin have to be rivua. Remember we mentioned they have to be a square, but that's clear that it doesn't have to be a cube. It doesn't have to be the height the same size as the width and the length. So you can have a mudna looking pair of tefillin that the width and the length are the same, but they're tall. You can kill somebody if you bang into somebody, but that's okay. That's perfectly kosher lechatchila to have tefillin like that. So there are some who wanted to suggest, we'll write on very, very big pieces of cloth, so we'll have plenty of room to write mamish beautifully, kedasu chadin, niksav, will be mehudish and mehudar, but the tefillin themselves are going to be very, very skinny, so that we'll be able to get in the perfect size. So there is actually a place that produces such batim, the kula. I don't know if there's an official term for them. I call them the small, tall tefillin. But the mice and most people, anyone ever seen them? I have not seen them. I've heard about them. I haven't seen them up close. I've seen them advertised, but I don't think they really caught on because they look funny and no one wants to wear tefillin like that.
There was once someone who made tefillin, the shell yad was a little smaller for bar mitzvah boys.
Right.
But they weren't the
tall ones. Yeah, it's, again, that's the bar mitzvah boys have the biggest issue with this because their arms aren't so big. So the bottom line is me'ikar mikra din, we pass, and the whole plugs are thing doesn't really exist. That's the ikar din. Even the Mishnah Berurah, who says to be machmer, the Mishnah Berurah says the bottom line is if you don't have any room on your arms, so Mishnah Berurah is a clout, it's better to go up rather than go down. Rather have the tefillin higher than lower, because if the tefillin are too low, then your mamash not yotze according to anybody, because it's not on the muscle. If the tefillin are too high, so nishkefelach yotze according to most of the Rishonim, anyway, the whole plugs row is a very questionable chumrah. But that's where it started from, because those Rishonim had this tradition that the tefillin have to be on the lower half of the arm. When it comes to the makom anochas tefillin shel rosh, they're also very very exact halachas as to where the tefillin have to be placed. So here the halachas are governed by the phrase bein einecha. So bein einecha teaches us really two things. It means in terms of situated, the tefillin have to be bein ha'inayim, and in terms of how low down or how high up they have to be is also derived from the phrase of bein ha'inayim. Here the Gemara tells us that the phrase bein ha'inayim means from the beginning of the where the hair either does grow or at one point in history used to grow. So how do we know that? So the Gemara learns this out from Xavier Shava. It says, Ukshatim also I never put the first bein ha'inayim. It says, Lo sosimu korcha bein ha'inayim lameis. The Torah uses the phrase of bein ha'inayim, saying that when somebody dies, you're not allowed to start ripping out your hair out of agony. That's an issa min ha'Torah, and it says, Lo sosimu korcha bein ha'inayim lameis. So clearly, that phrase bein ha'inayim means when the hair is growing. It doesn't mean don't pull out the hair between your eyes. There's no hair that grows there. So obviously, ben enechem lemeis means b'makom seyar. So too, ben enechem by tefillin means b'makom seyar. The Gemara says that's halacha moshe mesina. This is gzeirah shava. That the halacha is that the tefillin have to be placed on the at least where the beginnings of the hair starts to grow. So this halacha is also a lot of people are not familiar with, not careful about. This is something that always requires chizuk, that a person has to really be careful that his tefillin are fitting properly, that the entire bayis, mamish to the very bottom, is always above where the roots of the hair either do grow now, where the roots of the hair used to grow. Even though, you know, sometimes we see these pictures from you know, people of the very big European tefillin, they're mamish on the person's forehead. So that's shalokedin, that's poskim, right? It's a serious shaila. It's not even a shaila. So the pasha says you're not using the tefillin that way. That the tefillin have to be adjusted properly. That the entire bias is b'mokom tchilas ha'atzmichas ha'aros. And then, of course, has also to be careful that the bias is positioned properly. That it's bein ha'inayim. How perfect bein ha'inayim does it have to be? That means you have to sit there with a mirror for 25 minutes to make sure that it's half a millimeter, can't be off a little bit. So the Pasha says that not. The Pasha says that as long as it basically looks like in most areas of halacha, you call it like a sieve, it looks to you like it's bein ha'inayim. So that's also, that's good enough. That's what the halacha is. There were many Hasidish poskim who were vehemently opposed to people using tefillin mirrors because they said it's against the din in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch in your day of rights, you're not allowed, a man's not allowed to look into the mirror because that's an isser of Yubash Gevasim Las Ish. So to which the other poskim pointed out, but the poskim Rishonim, right, we don't follow that bisman hazeh, because bisman hazeh looking in the mirror is not considered to be derech hanoshim, since men also look into mirrors bisman hazeh. So if we pass in your day that a man's allowed to look into a mirror when he combs his hair, so then he's allowed to look in the mirror when he wants to fix his fillet. So that's why most non-Hasidish people are not that concerned with the using of the tefillin mirrors. And forget, it's a good idea to use a tefillin mirror. It saves you time in the morning rather than spending 20 minutes positioning it, hoping that you're tefillin the right place. You take a quick look in the mirror and shine, and it's good. So that's what most people do. I remember last year, 2 years ago, in Eretz Yisrael once, and I took out my tefillin mirror just for 1 second to look at it, and a guy started screaming at me. Guy's mamash like screaming at me, Derech Begedisha, and Derech Al Noshim, and Derech. It's like he discovered America. I said, this was discussed 300 years ago already. The folks have discussed the Shiloh. I don't know, people get very agitated about a lot of things. It should just be tilted or dropped, just a little bit of some ashu that it should be kineged halev. It should basically be straight on the muscle, just a little bit, a little bit of an angle becoming it.
How's that now? We know this has to be on the shoulder. If it's on the side a little bit, people come running to you and
As long as it's pretty much Ben Einayim. Some say that as long as the Ben Einayim doesn't mean between these parts of the eyes. We don't have pictures. It means between these parts of the eyes. As long as it's anywhere, the whole bias is between the outer parts of the eye, that's also called Ben Einayim. That's what some say, yeah. You should try to be right. You should try to put the film should be kedasach adin. They should be lechatchila properly centered, that it's mamash ben ha'inayim as best as humanly possible, and it should be a little bit above where the tchilas sa'aras grow. Sometimes it's hard to be mishai where the tchilas sa'aras used to grow, so one should try to be machmer a little bit, to have them a little bit higher. So I remember also, I don't know, everyone gets so antsy about tefillin. So a guy comes running over to me also in Eretz Yisrael. A guy comes running to open him and he says that you got to put your tefillin up higher. That's not where your hair starts to grow. I was looking at him. I said, you know where my hair used to grow? I don't remember where my hair used to grow. I didn't say that. I was more respectful. I said, thank you so much. I appreciate your concern. Means the whole tefillin have to be. So whatever is not in the right place is not there. So the tefillin have to be a square on the bottom. So if half the tesura is off base, and then that part of the tesura should like it in. It doesn't say it explicitly. Doesn't say it. But Rabbi really thought that that's what the pashas and ben einayim means. That otherwise he said, it's almost impossible. Your whole bias is not ben einayim. Your ben einayim is a half an inch to buy. The tefillin is 2.5 inches. So it must be that. That's what he thought, that it has to be that way. So by Nafkamina, would have tilted a little bit as long as the whole bias is Benanai. That's what it's his Chiddush. One has to be careful that the Keshesh or Rosh is also situated properly. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rishonim that it has to be on the head. The whole bias is supposed to be on the head. The whole tefillin, the whole Keshesh is supposed to be on the head. It's not supposed to be drooping down into the neck. So what's considered to be the end of the head, and what's considered to be ready the neck? So here we assume as follows, that as long as with the basic hair of the head is still growing, with the roots of the hair on, that's technically still considered to be part of the head. The poskim write that lechatchila the keshesh or rosh should be placed at the bottom of the skull, as long as right where you feel the bottom, in a little hole on the bottom where your skull ends. So that's where you should try to put the keshesh, that it should be mamish on that bump, right at the end of the skull. That's where the most of the keshesh should be. And a little bit of the keshesh goes below that. That's okay. But the whole keshesh should be in a place where the sa'aros are still growing. Sometimes you have people, very often they borrow tefillin from one another, and the tefillin are too big. So the tefillin's drooping. The tefillin's drooping in the front, and it's drooping down in the back, and it's all over the place. And that's not right. One should try to be careful that the tefillin are proper. Positioned. The question is, what do you do? Lamaisa, if you borrow a pair of tefillin from somebody and Lamaisa, they just don't fit, there's no one else around, what do you do? So then, lechori, you have to adjust the kesher. So we have to get the person's rishus. You can't just start playing with his tefillin forehead. So you have to adjust the kesher. You have to find someone who's able to adjust the kesher for you. The Avnei Nezer has a tremendous chiddush. He claims that if you borrow a pair of tefillin and you adjust the kesher, so then you're not yet to the mitzvah, because it's not a kesher shel kayama. Just as in Uch HaShabbos, a kesher that's made for less than 24 hours is not called a kesher. So if you're just making a kesher for 5 minutes, then you're going to change it as soon as you take the tefillin off. So that kesher is not called the kesher shel kayama, and you're not yet to the mitzvah. That's a big, big chiddush. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't say such a thing. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't even give any mention of such a concept. The Pashto says that that's a din by Shabbos, not a din kol tarkul. Again, a lot of lumdus as to why should or should not be correct. But that was his interesting chumrah. So Kopar, we know a little bit in terms of where the Shel Yad is supposed to be situated, where the Shel Rosh is supposed to be situated. There is another halach we spoke a little bit about in the Shabbos Shiva Drasha. I want us to be careful about chatzitzas in the realm of the mitzvah of tefillin. That this is a big machlekes of Rishon, machlekes in the Rash, in the Rush. Is there even such a problem of chatzitza? The Gemara never says explicitly there's a problem of chatzitza. It all revolves around a Gemara. The Gemara tells us that the Kohanim, when they would do avod in the Beis Hamikdash, did not wear the tefillin shel yad. The Gemara says the tefillin shel rosh they did wear, because there was room. They would put the tefillin shel rosh on, and they would put their hat on. And even the Kohen Gadol, the Gemara says, who was very crowded up in his head area, he had the tzitz and he had the mikvahs, and he had so many different things to put up there. But the Gemara says even he had some room for the tefillin. That's the Gemara says that the tefillin were very, very small, so there was enough room for his hat, there was enough room for his tzitz, there was enough room for his tefillin. He had a lot of room there. There are some Rishonim, Taisus quotes the Machlekes of Rishonim, some Rishonim will say that if you look carefully in the Chumash, the Torah always describes the hat of a regular Kohen as a Mikba'as, and the hat of the Kohen Gadol as a Mitznefes. So is there any difference between a Mitznefes and a Mikba'as? So Taisus claims, yes, there's a difference in terms of size, that a Mitznefes was smaller than a Mikba'as. That tells us Chiddush. Why was that? Why did the Kohen Gadol wear the smaller of the two hats? So Taisus says, because he needed more room up there, because he had to save some room for the tits. The regular Kohen, all he had to have there was a hat and a pair of tefillin, so it wasn't so crowded, so he could wear a bigger hat. Whereas the Kohen Gadol, who had more things up there, he had to wear a small hat. So you see, just parenthetically from Tosfos, that the higher level of Kedusha you get, the smaller your hat is. Because, as Tosfos says, you become a Kohen Gadol, you don't need such a big yarmulke. You're already Nish Kaddish. When you're a regular Kohen, so you need a higher level of Kedusha, you gotta grab onto more things, you gotta get a bigger yarmulke. Anyway, Tosfos doesn't say that explicitly, but that's my interpretation of Tosfos. So getting back to the story. So the Gemara says that that the tefillin shel rosh, that wasn't the problem of chatzitza, but the tefillin shel yad was a big problem, and there was no way for the regular kohen or kohen gadol for that matter to wear tefillin shel yad b'shas ha'avoda. Why not? So the Gemara says, well, because there's a halacha that the big dick huna have to be directly on one's body. There's not allowed to be a chatzitza al besoro. There has to be a yitzir, has to be a connection between the begodim and the kohen's body. So if you're going to put the tefillin shel yad there, so that's going to be separated. That's going to be a davar chaitzitz between the big dick huna and the kohen's body. That's all the Gemara says. So come to Rishon and say, wait a second. Why don't you wear the tefillin shel yad and put them on top of the big dekuna? So that's not a problem. Just put the big dekuna on first, the no chatzitz, and then tie the tefillin on top of the big dekuna. So comes the rush and says, you know why you can't do that? Because there's a din of chatzitz for tefillin. Just as there's a din of hilchos chatzitz for big dekuna, so too there's a din of hilchos chatzitz for hilchos tefillin as well. That's what the rush's chiddush is. And the rush says, it's the same pasuk, al. Whenever the Torah says al, it means it has to be directly al. It can't be a davar chatzitz. So it says al basara by big dekuna. It says al yadecha by tefillin. So it can't be a davar chatzitz. Then the Rosh says, for that matter, you can't have a double chotzitz by the Shel Rosh either. It doesn't say al by the Shel Rosh, it says bein einecha. Al is referring to everything. It has to be an absolute connection between the body, both for the Shel Yad and the Shel Rosh, and the tefillin. This is the Rosh Hashita. So the Rashba disagrees with this Rosh. The Rashba says, no, there's no such halacha. There's no such halacha of chatzitza. So why is it that the Kohen didn't wear tefillin Shel Yad? So the Rashba says there's a halacha of l'chala os v'lo l'achayim l'os, which the Gemara at least at one stage thought means that the tefillin shel yad are not supposed to be exposed. They're supposed to be covered up. You put it under your sleeve, it's supposed to be covered. You can't just have the tefillin shel yad just exposed to everybody. At the end of the day, we don't even really paskin like that. The Gemara says in the end, there is no such halacha. This is a peladuk Rashba, why he brought the Gemara back to life. And the Gemara itself rejects that svar. That's a question in and of itself. But the Rashba is assuming there is such a halacha that the tefillin shel yad is supposed to be in a covered up position. They should be a discreet area. They shouldn't be just going before some makol. So comes the Rashba and says, so where are you going to put the tefillin shel yad? You can put them on top of the shirt. So even though it's not a problem of a chatzitza, but that's going to be a violation of the chala os, below the achirim os. So comes the Magen Avraham and says, I don't understand. Why don't you just have as follows? Have the big tikkunah. Have a tefillin, and then let him put a jacket on top of the tefillin. So that'll solve the problem of l'chol yos l'chem yos. So the Magen Avraham says, you can't do that, because there's a din that a Kohen can't be meruba begodim. The Kohen's only allowed to wear the four begodim, or the Kohen is only allowed to wear the eight begodim. If he wears another baguette, so that passes the avot. Let's say the Kohen's doing an avot, then he wants to put on a pair of socks, he wants to put on a yarmulke, he wants to put on anything that's a baguette, so that's an isadirai, so that disqualifies the entire avot. He's chayim misa b'dei shemayim, so that's not a good idea. So therefore, the Magen Avraham says the Kohen doesn't have an option of putting on another baguette, so his hands are tied. That, no pun intended, to put the tefillin under the big baguette disqualifies the big dekuna. To put the tefillin on top of the baguette is a violation of a chol yos, and there's no way to solve that problem. So comes the Magen Avraham, later poskim, if you follow that Magen Avraham and say, so that would be true for the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash. What if you have a guy who has a cast? A guy has a chatzitza, and he wants to know, he has a kiyast mamash on the top of his arm. So how do I put on tefillin? So according to the Magen Avraham, l'chor, it's no problem. Put the tefillin on top of the cast, and then put your jacket on top of the cast, on top of the tefillin. Because according to the Rashba, according to this Magen Avraham's Rashba, there's no problem of chatzitza and l'chos tefillin. It's just this technical problem of l'chol yos that the Kohen can't get around because of this quirk of hilchos merubah begodim. But if you don't have that problem, so then it's no problem at all. According to the Rosh, it's ridiculous. According to the Rosh, you're not Yotze B'chlam in the Torah. It's not Al Yodecha. It's a Dovra Chaytze. But the Rashba says, Lo Yodvar Miyadam. There is no such halacha of Al Yodecha. Well, let's say according to the Rashba, by Tefillin Shel Rosh. No, Tefillin Shel Rosh, there's no Chatzitza B'chlam. There's no Luchalios. There's nothing. So according to the Rashba, you could put your yarmulke over here and put your Tefillin on top of your yarmulke. Big deal. According to the Rashba, there's no din of Chatzitza. So how do we paskin halacha in the Shaila? So lechatchilu, we try to be chayshish for the Rosh. We always try that there shouldn't be any chatzitzas on the tefillin, in both the tefillin shayat and the tefillin shayrosh. Let's say a person is mamash stuck. There's no way for him to put on tefillin otherwise. So it's better than nothing. It means it's better. Whether he should make a bracha, not make a bracha, it's a different story. But he shouldn't take the attitude, well, I can't put on tefillin altogether. A guy, let's say, has a bandage on his head or something. So if it's not sterile, if the doctor says he can't do it medically, he can't put the tefillin on, he can't. But the doctor says, yeah, you can put the tefillin on on top of the bandage, no big deal. So according to the Rosh, not Yotze, but according to the Rashba, you are Yotze. So according to the Rashba, you should put it on. So the poskim say that if you have lays braver, it's better to put it on than not to put it on. You have nothing to lose by putting it on. So one would be Yotze, at least according to the Rashba. It's based on this, that the poskim write, let's say if a man is wearing a toupee or something, so he really should take it off when he puts on tefillin, because according to the Rosh, he's not Yotze in the midst of tefillin. So that's a serious problem. It's in this topic that the Mishnah Berurah discusses long hair. It discusses the Shaila, whether hair can serve as a constitute a chatzitza or not, but tefillin shel rosh. So the pashtus advarim is that long hair is not considered to be a problem because that's natural. It means whatever is natural growing. It's not whatever's part of your body, a natural growth. That's not considered to be a davar chatzitz. So there are some acharonim who say that maybe if the hair is very, very long, so it's not considered to be darker b'chach. That's not normal. Who stands them not normal? The mashgiach and the yeshiva standards are not normal. The bachur and the yeshiva standards, who exactly sets the tone? So there are many achrayim who write the following. If the hair is long, that in and of itself is not a problem. Shimshon also wears tefillin. So Nazir also wears tefillin. So the long hair itself is not in and of itself a problem. But if the hair is starting to be moved from other parts, let's say a guy does all kind of fancy schmancy hairdos. He's got hair growing in the back. He moves it to the front. He flips it over. He's got the...
A comb over is a problem?
I don't know. I haven't combed my front of my head in many, many years. I don't remember.
Understood, but I'm saying you have a guy, you have a comb over, and he's bald, but he keeps his hair here and then combs.
And he's moving. He's moving hair all over the place.
Right, so
not moving
that.
I don't know. I'm not going to say it's not Dachar B'Kach. I don't know. I'm not going to say what is what's not Dachar B'Kach. Suffice it to say that hair coming out of the normal place of a normal scalp in the normal place where it belongs, the devotional put it, we assume it's not a chatzitza. Once it's coming from other directions and other areas, it's a potential issue in terms of chatzitza. I'll mention next week. We'll just finish up some of these issues in terms of chatzitza. Because the pashas is the other hand is nothing. The other hand is like putting filling in the foot. I mean, it's not. The Torah says it has to be the weaker of the two hands. No, it's not. It's the strong hand. Forget it. It's the strong hand. The shayla is the other way. The shayla is, let's say a person.
Right, right. So the other hand, a person has a strong hand. Right. 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 Right